Hello, and welcome to the Heathrow results for the 9 months to the 30th of September 2022. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question-and-answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present John Holland-Kaye, Chief Executive Officer, Javier Chavez, Chief Financial Officer, and Sally Ding, Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. Please begin your meeting.
Well, hello and welcome to all who've dialed in to join our 2022 quarter three results presentation. Today, we're going to present our key operational and strategic highlights, including our operational performance and a review of our financial position and outlook, which I'll ask Javier to take us through, and then we'll conclude by taking your questions. Let's start by taking a look at our key operational and financial highlights on slide four. So, overall, this has been a better summer than I think people had expected. Better in terms of service, we were able to achieve service levels not far short of where we were in 2019, but also better in terms of passenger numbers, where we served 18 million passengers in quarter three, and Heathrow was able to regain its position as the busiest hub airport in Western Europe, which contrasts with this time last year when I think we were one of the quietest. It's been a very challenging year scaling up. We have at Heathrow recruited 1,500 people just in the last 9 months. And of course, the airlines and the ground handlers, who make up 90% of all the people who work at Heathrow, have been doing the same. And we've been working hard to keep supply and demand in balance. We introduced a temporary capacity cap at the beginning of the summer. That was a very difficult decision to make, but absolutely the right thing to do. And it helped to protect the service for the 18 million passengers who traveled through since then. I think our financial performance has been very solid. It's been very much in line with the recovery in demand. But of course, we do continue to make a loss before tax once you strip out the non-cash movement in fair value adjustments. And that's an indication that we have not yet got the regulatory settlement that is right for investing in both the operating costs to deliver the service the passengers want, or the capital investment that is required to support long-term improvements at Heathrow. Our balance sheet and liquidity do remain strong, with the revolving credit facility fully refinanced and expanded, and I'm very grateful for all those on this call who've been so supportive of our financing, not just this year, but over the last couple of years of COVID. Moving on to slide five, a quick look at our strategic priorities. And these really haven't changed since we were last together. The most important is that we rebuild the aviation ecosystem back in a way that is safe, focused on service, efficiency, and resilience. There's no doubt that we've lost a lot of the sharpness that that we had operationally before COVID. We've lost a lot of the experience and talent that we had pre-COVID. Almost 25,000 people left their jobs at Heathrow out of 75,000 during the pandemic. And it's going to take some time to build that back, but that is our real focus, so we can get back to not just the full level of capacity that we had pre-COVID, but also the levels of service that made Heathrow one of the best airports in the world. Second, of course, we need the regulatory settlement that incentivizes investment to deliver for consumers, and I'll touch on that a little bit more later. Third, net zero carbon aviation. This is not just important for us as a sector. It's vital that we play our part in the overall economy and protecting the planet, so we can protect the benefits of aviation in a world without carbon. And then finally, sustainable, affordable, financeable, and deliverable expanded Heathrow, something which I think we demonstrated the benefits of during COVID, where airlines consolidated into Heathrow. The extra capacity allowed us to open up new routes to markets we'd never been able to serve before because of the lack of capacity, not just in developing economies such as India and Southeast Asia, but also across the UK with important markets that are underserved. And I'll touch a little bit more on that later. So let's turn first to look at our traffic performance on slide seven. And in the first 9 months of 2022, we had a pretty slow start at the beginning as we were dealing with Omicron for the first couple of months. But then once the markets were opened up again, we had a wave of pent-up demand coming through. And I think that's been a pattern with many markets, that a lot of people have been desperate to get away, particularly on their holidays, to catch up with friends and relatives. So there's a wave of demand that follows the opening up of any new market, and a remarkable rate of growth. Overall, 44.2 million passengers traveled through Heathrow in the first 9 months. That's 73% of 2019 levels. In the same period, passenger air traffic movements have recovered to about 75% of 2019 levels. And of course, cargo air traffic movements reduced as passenger flights replaced freight as the primary mode of cargo transport. And overall, cargo volumes still remain about 15% below 2019. And although demand continues to be driven by outbound leisure, inbound leisure and business travel are starting to recover, although business travel still only accounted for around a fifth of overall quarter three traffic compared to nearly a third pre-pandemic. So in total, business volumes are about a half of what they were pre-pandemic in quarter three. But that's something we expect will recover over time. By region, North America, Europe, and the Middle East remain the main markets served, which reflects the quicker removal of travel restrictions in these regions. And typically we've seen airports and airlines be able to recover more quickly where they have either had a strong domestic market, as in the US, they've kept open for transfer passengers, as some of the Middle Eastern hubs did, or they've had strong subsidies from their governments, as some airports in both Europe and the Middle East have been able to benefit from. And they have had an advantage in being able to recover over the last 12 months or so. We have seen some recovery in Asia Pacific, but of course, countries such as China remain closed, and others such as Singapore and Japan have only recently reopened their borders. And I think it's fair to say that in many countries, travel still has quite a lot of friction. I was in the Middle East a couple of weeks ago, and I still had to have PCR tests for two of the markets that I went to visit. And those kinds of frictions just make it a bit harder for business travelers to do the kind of journeys that they used to do pre-COVID, where you can just come in and out of countries at will. And I think it'll take a little while for some of that friction to disappear. So on slide 8, we've provided a comparison on our traffic relative to other European hub airports. And you remember this time last year, we were the smallest of the big five European hubs. This year, we were the busiest hub. And I think the rate of growth that we've had, 34 million additional passengers in the first 9 months, I think I'm right in saying that that is more growth than any other airport in the world has been able to achieve. And while that is a good sign of the underlying health of demand at Heathrow, you can also see what a financial, what a huge logistical challenge it places on the business to scale up again so quickly. And you might remember that it was this time last year that I was encouraging companies across Heathrow to hire 12,000 people ahead of summer 2022. That sounded like quite a brave or even a risky thing to do at the time, given that we'd only recently come out of furlough. Many markets were still closed, but absolutely the right thing to do to allow us to be ready for the summer this year. And if you'll see on slide 9, you'll see the impact of that in terms of our standard service metrics. So in June, as you might remember, we started to see some aspects of the airport ecosystem coming under pressure. And that really materialized in declining departures punctuality, departures in the late night curfew, passengers waiting a long time for their bags, and in some cases, planes departing without their bags. And that was a reflection of the challenge of capacity at the airport across all of the companies being out of line with the level of demand. And that's why we put the temporary cap in place. It absolutely worked, and you'll see here the improvements in our standard service metrics over the summer. Overall, service metrics were not too bad, and we remain with higher service scores than most of our European hub competitors, which is encouraging. But you'll see that our baggage connection rates have been steadily improving back towards where they were in 2019. That's a key metric for passengers, particularly for a connecting hub. Overall passenger satisfaction Certainly dipped down in July, and you'll remember that is around the first half of July was before the cap came in, and the second half was after the cap came in. You can see steady improvements there in overall satisfaction. Departures punctuality, really quite low in July because of the issues that I talked about, including low arrivals punctuality because of issues at other hub airports, but generally getting back to a higher level. But you can see there's still a long way to go before we get back to normal. And security queues, actually, improving substantially. Here we're looking at the waiting time under 5 minutes, which were 70% of passengers got through in less than 5 minutes, but over 90% of passengers got through in less than 10 minutes, which in the circumstance, I think, is a very good performance. And certainly when I was working in security over the summer, people were amazed by how quickly they had got through check-in and then through security because they'd had such negative reports of what service would be like. But I'm glad that we took the right action. We all worked closely together to serve passengers and get them through and on their way quickly. But you can also see we have a little way to go to rebuild. And I'd like to just touch on slide 10, what we are doing to build back to full capacity. So just to give you some sense of where we are at, this time last year we needed to recruit across all of the 400 companies on the airport. We needed to recruit about 25,000 people to get back to full capacity, and not just recruit the people, but also make sure they're security passed and they have the right skills and training to be able to fulfill their jobs effectively. That is a huge logistical challenge coming from where we were, but we've made very good progress. I think going into the summer, we were probably about halfway to that goal. Currently, we're about 85 to 90% back to full capacity in terms of the numbers of people. And we're making good progress just over the last 12 months. So my encouragement to our partners across the airport today is to keep going and get back to full capacity as soon as we can so that we can accommodate any level of demand this time next summer. Because, of course, we've all seen just how long it takes to recruit and train and get people back to normal. We're taking a lead in this. We've set up a build back capacity program. It looks at all aspects of the airport operation and makes sure that they are well connected with each other, that we have the resources in the right place, that we don't just get back to the level of efficiency that we had before the pandemic. We try to get back to a much higher level. But there's a lot of work that needs to go into this, and it needs close coordination. And we've recently appointed one of our most experienced operational colleagues, Catherine Leahy, to lead the work with the handlers and the airlines across the airport to make sure we're all working closely together, we're sharing information and getting back to full levels of efficiency as fast as we can. So far, so good with that, but more work to do. And you might have seen that we have lifted the cap that we put in place over the summer. We don't actually need it at the moment because demand is well below the levels that we set it at 100,000 departing passengers a day. In future, I think we're only concerned about keeping demand and capacity in balance on the very peak days. And of course, summer was an extended peak period. So we are talking with the airlines about how we best match up capacity and demand over key periods such as Christmas. But I don't expect that will have any material impact on passengers. So you shouldn't be concerned about cancellations or anything like that on peak days. We will just be managing it all behind the scenes, working closely with airlines. But I just need to make sure that we don't give anyone a false expectation that everything is back to normal. Clearly isn't. It's pretty good, but it's not quite where we need it to be. And there's a lot more work that we're doing, working with our partners to get it back to full capacity. So now moving on to slide 11, I'll just touch on where we are at with the CAA. And you'll know that this has been a very long process with the CAA. Of course, it's been made more difficult because of the impact of COVID over this time. Makes it much harder to forecast some of the key building blocks, particularly around passengers. And of course, there's been a huge amount of change in the financial markets and with inflation. So there's a lot of issues at play here. You'll have seen the CAA's final proposals that they released a few months ago. We have responded to those very strongly, pointing out not just some errors that they've made in the calculations that they have made, but also overall that in the round, this is a plan that really does not work. It doesn't generate enough cash and revenue for us to be financeable and deliver the level of service that passengers expect. And we've made a very strong case for that. We have submitted that to the CAA, and they're taking some time to assess that. No decisions have been made yet about H7. We don't know when those will be made. And actually, I'd rather that they took time to assess it properly and come to the right decision, but they rushed to a bad conclusion and that we then found ourselves having to appeal the decision. So if you will bear with us, we will hopefully get to the right outcome over the next few months. So finally, let's move on to where we are with our sustainability strategy 2.0. And you might remember that this is something we launched 4 or 5 years ago initially, and it was quite a revolutionary plan at the time. It set out some very ambitious targets for making Heathrow a great place to live and work, play our role nationally and globally. And last year, we updated it. We focused down on two main issues: net zero aviation, which is the big challenge for the whole sector, and making Heathrow a great place to live and work, which are our commitments to our local community and to our colleagues. In terms of net zero aviation, we have been campaigning for this for some time. We were among the first to call for the aviation sector to be included in the Paris climate targets of net zero by 2050. We developed a plan across the industry to do that. We got government support in the UK for that plan, and we heard a commitment from the government earlier this year around the plan that would deliver the Jet Zero strategy, and that includes one of the key planks from a policy point of view that we've been asking for, which is a mandate for using sustainable aviation fuels. We're also encouraging the government to put in place a price stability mechanism, which will encourage production of sustainable aviation fuels here in the UK. That's a really good step forward. We've been taking our own initiative here by putting in place an incentive in our on the aviation fuel that's been oversubscribed. But it will mean that more sustainable aviation fuel will be uploaded at Heathrow this year than any other airport in the world. So that's a really good step forward. We're going to be increasing the incentive subject to airline support for next year, and that'll help to not just shift the market towards using sustainable fuels rather than fossil fuels, but also demonstrate that decarbonizing aviation is a reality that we can develop as quickly as we can upscale the production of SAF. One thing that we were keen to do was to make sure that as a global hub, this wasn't just a UK solution that could potentially make the UK uncompetitive. We also wanted it to be a global solution with some consistent standards around the world. And we've been working to build a coalition of the willing. I was at the G7 last year at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting earlier this year. We've been at ICAO, and actually the UK government and the US governments have taken a really strong lead in this. And I'm delighted that just a few weeks ago, there was a political agreement at ICAO for net zero aviation by 2050, with some quite challenging targets for fossil fuel carbon emission reductions around the world. That's a huge step forward. I'm sure we will keep on working on this. But that now means that the focus moves to how we implement those policies rather than whether we implement them. And it creates a level playing field for the UK and the other countries that we compete with. Finally, just in terms of a great place to live and work, we published our service access strategy. We've been rebuilding our network for service access with a better bus network to get colleagues and local people into the airport more easily. The Elizabeth line is now open, and that will be through running through Heathrow from the 6th of November. So that'll be a really fantastic level of connectivity into central London. And we're restarting our business summits, which are a way of introducing small local businesses into our supply chain and helping to support SMEs in our local community. So let me now hand over to Javier, who will cover the far more exciting pieces, which are the financial performance for the year. Thank you.
Thank you, John, and hello to everyone. I will now share an overview of our key financial performance starting on slide 14. So as John mentioned, the passenger numbers growing to 44.2 million in the period. Our revenue also increased materially to approximately 2.1 billion for the first 9 months of the year. We also have continued investing in recruitment and the ramp up of our operations, which meant that operating costs increased by 48% to 854 million. As a result, taking those two numbers together, adjusted EBITDA increased to 1.3 billion. However, as you mentioned, unfortunately, Hydro remains loss-making at the pre-tax level when we exclude fair value adjustments on investment properties and financial instruments. As you know, these one-off non-cash fair value movements are explained by the increased volatility in financial markets, in particular at the end of the quarter following the UK government's original money budget and the sharp rise in interest rate expectations which follow. However, we don't expect this to continue in the long term, and as you know, as a prudent business, we don't speculate with swaps. These are swaps that are put in place to really hedge our exposure to interest rates and inflation, and we will hold them to maturity. Capital expenditure in the period increased to £318 million as we continue to reinvest in our operations. And the great news for you and for everyone is that our balance sheet remains very strong, and we saw an increase in cash flow from operations to 1.3 billion, driven by the growth in EBITDA. Looking at net debt, there has been a slight increase at the group level, mainly due to CapEx, but also an increase in the accretion charge of our inflation-linked debt, but largely offset by the cash generated from operations. We take a closer look to the details, starting from revenue on slide 15. We already mentioned that on the back of the strong summer, revenue grew more than 200% versus last year and is only 2.5% below 2019 levels. By components, aeronautical revenue increased to 1.4 billion, driven by higher passenger numbers, but also aircraft and cargo movements, and implementation of the interim tariff from the start of the year. Retail revenue increased to 413 million, in line with the increase in passengers. And it, obviously, in terms of retail, the recent reversal of the tax-free shopping decision by the government is obviously disappointing, as the competitiveness of the UK continues to be undermined, as we remain the only country in Europe without it. We will continue monitoring and lobbying the new government to try to reimpose that, and we will keep you posted on progress. In terms of revenue, increased to 342 million, with other regulated charges and Hydro Express income increasing in line with traffic. If we move to costs on slide 16, I mentioned that overall operating costs were up 48% to 854 million, reflecting the delivery and investment that we are doing in our ramp-up plan. By components, people cost, which includes third-party resourcing for better comparability with prior year, increased to 286 million, mainly due to additional cost on recruitment, overtime, and training. Also, the increase in operational and maintenance costs reflect the reopening now of all the operational assets, including Terminal 4 from June, and the impact of high inflation and compensation paid to airlines on certain service metrics that we failed in the summer under the service quality rebate scheme. Utilities and other costs increased by 68%, given the impact of higher energy prices and inflation. And obviously, while we retain our focus on efficiency in our operations, we expect operating costs to continue to increase. As John mentioned, we are working to build back capacity in full ahead of demand and the expectation of high inflation in the short term. Moving to slide 17, and obviously given recent developments on, we thought it would be important to share with you further details on our energy management framework. Obviously, the increase in energy prices is a reality, and this will continue in the short to medium term. Obviously, at Hydro, what we can do is to prevent some of these things, and we have a robust energy management framework in place, which has been extremely important during this period to avoid some of the increases in costs that otherwise would have happened. We have a hedging policy designed to achieve a blended average price for energy with the minimum risk, with purchases spread over a period ranging from 12 to 36 months. The good news is that in 2022, we are fully hedged, and around 90% of our costs in 2023 are also hedged. Obviously, we are also focusing on our energy consumption. There's no cheaper energy than actually not consuming it at first instance. So in recent years, we upgraded our around 200,000 lights to LED across the airport, which is saving around 80 gigawatt hours of electricity a year. And currently, we are optimizing the heating and ventilation time clocks to reflect passenger demand profiles. Finally, we continue to focus on our energy efficiency and renewables investments, such as our biomass combined heat and power plant, which reduce gas and electric consumption and significantly reduce Hydro's carbon emissions from its buildings. The rising energy price markets makes investment in energy even more efficient and even more important, and that's absolutely implicit in our Hydro 2.0 net zero plan, optimizing the level of future capital investment to decarbonize heat, but also to upgrade our electrical networks to deliver our ambitious net zero goals. Moving to slide 18, as you can see in the chart, which is hopefully quite familiar over the last few years, you can see how our cost burn is increasing in line with passenger growth. We have kept and we continue keeping a very tight control on operating costs and capital expenditure. And as you can see, our OPEX is now increasing and with significant pressure through general inflation and ramp-up activities. So we will see that our costs in nominal terms will be back to 2019 levels this year. Capital expenditure continues to increase as we have restarted to catch up on the 1.1 billion underinvestment from the past 2 years. Still, around half of the statutory regulatory depreciation that we have. We expect also interest paid that will also increase as we see a lower benefit this year from the swap reprofiling program we completed in 2020. And this increase in cash interest paid will continue in future years. All of these actions, as you might remember, were taken to optimize our cash flow during the pandemic, but this will start normalizing in the next few years. That's why we need the right settlement for H7 to support a minimum level of cash generation. Despite all of that, we still retain a very robust liquidity position. And as John mentioned earlier, I am delighted and I'm extremely grateful for the successful completion of the refinancing of our revolving credit facilities at the end of September. And I would like to thank all of you, our love banks, who supported us through this process. On slide 19, you can see that we continue to prioritize the protection of liquidity and cash flow. Our solid operating performance over the first 9 months generated £1.3 billion of cash from operations. And from a net debt perspective, this means that we have been able to cover capital expenditure, interest, and increase in accretion across our inflation-linked bonds and swap portfolio. Overall, the net debt at Hydro SP level increased to £14.5 billion, and Hydro Finance's net debt remained broadly flat at £15.6 billion. Just as a reminder, no payments have been made to ultimate shareholders, and at this stage we're forecasting no dividends for this year. From a funding perspective, Sally has been very busy. We have been completing £400 million so far this year, and obviously we will continue looking at opportunities to do further funding. It's true that market conditions are not ideal, but obviously we will continue keeping a close eye, and as soon as any opportunity arises, we will be there. Moving from cash flow to balance sheet on slide 20, our gearing is in line with pre-pandemic levels. Obviously, we mentioned that we keep an eye on liquidity and balance sheet, and our focus on managing net debt and the benefit by inflation on our RAB means that our group gearing ratios have reduced over the period. That helps to continue making our balance sheet remaining robust with comfortable covenant headroom across all classes of debt on our capital structure, underpinned by the fact that our RAB has increased to $18.6 billion, primarily because of inflation. Obviously, we expect gearing ratios to remain comfortable over the year, and hopefully when looking at this picture, you would agree with me. This demonstrates that the challenges ahead are not driven by debt nor gearing, but by minimum cash flow generation that can only be fixed by fair regulatory charges and realistic operational projections in CAA's decisions. Turning to slide 21, let me provide an update on our outlook for the year before handing over back to John. We have been discussing through the whole presentation that we had a very strong summer and that has put us into a situation to increase our traffic outlook for the full year to a range of 60 to 62 million passengers. This range reflects uncertainty of short-term demand due to current economic climate impacting the cost of living, but also the potential for new variants of COVID-19 as we enter the winter, but also the ongoing impact of the war in Ukraine. As a result of this traffic outlook, we expect that adjusted EBITDA for the whole year 2022 will reach around £1.6 billion. Obviously, we are in the process of finalizing detailed financial forecasts, and we will provide you an update for both 2022 and 2023 as part of our next investor report, which is due to be published in December. So with that, I will conclude the financial review and I'll hand that back to John for closing comments. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you. So let's just move on to our balanced scorecard, which is the four priorities. And you might remember this is the way in which we balance the competing needs within our business. Mojo, which is making Heathrow a great place to work, transforming customer service to become to give passengers the best airport service in the world, beating the plan, and sustainable growth. In terms of Mojo, in terms of what we have done, we've talked about some of the things, but I'll just touch on a few other things that we've been doing here. We've been improving the facilities for colleagues so they have better rest facilities and helping them with well-being. It's been a very difficult time for them and also a very busy time recently. We've recruited and trained 1,500 new colleagues just in the 9 months so far, and promoted 500 people internally. That's a really important contribution to the local community, is giving people careers and not just jobs. And of course, it helps to improve our diversity given the very diverse population we have around the airport. So that's something we're really excited by. We've also put in a winter support plan for our colleagues. We've paid a cost of living bonus in September, but we've also got a series of other measures such as making sure everyone gets a free hot meal when they are in work. So we'll continue to work to support colleagues with that. Diversity is improving. We are at 50% female colleagues at Bandai and executive level, which is a really fantastic place to be and really improves the quality of our management. But I want to see much better diversity on other measures right the way through the business as well. And for those of you who participated, the Midnight Marathon was back, and that's a good sign that we're starting to get back to normal. It was a little bit later in the year, just a few weeks ago, but fantastic to be able to join hundreds of colleagues out on the runway in the middle of the night. I can't say that I improved my score particularly, but it was a great thing to participate in. And going forward, of course, we'll be investing more heavily in recruitment and training. Our focus so far has been largely on the recruitment side, but all of those new managers also need a lot of training and development to make them the most effective they can be and help them to develop. So we are increasingly putting our focus on that. In terms of transforming service, we've touched on a lot of the major areas for that. Our real focus is about punctuality, making sure that not only do planes come in on time, but we can turn them around effectively, because that is where all of the work of the airport, the ground handlers, the airlines all come together to make sure that we can get passengers, cargo, and bags off planes quickly. We can get them cleaned restocked, restaffed, and refilled with passengers, cargo, and bags. And it only takes one of the many dozens of companies involved in that turnaround to hold things up, to impact on punctuality. So that is where a lot of the work of our build back capacity work will be. I mentioned here Operation London Bridge. For those of you who are familiar, that is the long-term plans that we've had in place to support the funeral of Her Majesty the Queen. She was a frequent user of Heathrow, and we felt we had a strong connection with her given the many events that she participated in, most recently opening Terminal 2. So it's a very sad moment, but we're proud that we played our part in keeping the skies quiet at critical times, but also bringing many of the VIP guests in and out and getting them on their way to the UN General Assembly straight afterwards. So we've talked about some of the work we're doing to keep improving service already. In terms of Beat the Plan, I think we've talked about the main points here, and a lot now depends on the CAA's final decision. And one thing that I find quite striking as an indicator that the CAA has not got the balance right yet is that we as the regulated entity, you would expect would have much more stable levels of profits through the cycle, where actually it looks as if the airlines will be the first to return to profitability and probably the first to start paying dividends again. And that shows that the balance of value between ourselves and the airline is just not right. And that's one of the things we've asked the CAA to take a look at. And then finally, in terms of sustainable growth, I think I've touched on the main points here. I hadn't really talked about expansion very much. We have started a review of the expansion program. We still think it is something that we both need to do and want to do. We're assessing how much of the work that's been done so far can be reused and what sort of timetable would be involved in that, and we'll be updating you on that in a few months' time. Coming up, I'll be at COP27 for a couple of days in a few weeks' time, and working now on the implementation of the sustainability plan for aviation, in particular the use of sustainable aviation fuel, and I'll be encouraging big companies, including those on this line, to increasingly buy sustainable aviation fuel when you do your corporate travel. And you'll have seen that a lot of companies have been trying to encourage people not to fly. Of course, that is their choice, but sustainable aviation fuel provides an alternative which allows you not only to make sure you're not putting more fossil fuel carbon into the air when you travel, but it'll also help to encourage the growth of the SAF market, which normal consumers in developing countries will be able to benefit from. And I think it's right that wealthy companies, and I'd include all of us on this call, take the lead in funding the decarbonisation of aviation as the heaviest users. And then I think I've talked about all the other points. So hopefully you get a sense that the airport is starting to come back to normal. We've got a lot of work to do to get back to full capacity, but we're taking the lead on this and we've got a plan. And I hope you see we've made good progress on that so far. And I also hope you get a sense that the business is in good hands. It's well managed. We're working closely with our airline and ground handler colleagues and with government to make sure that we get Heathrow back to its best and back to better than it was before the pandemic. So let me pause there and ask Mark to open up to any questions.
Thank you. If you want to ask a question, you can do so in two ways. Firstly, if you wish to ask it via the phone lines, you can dial 01 on your telephone keypads now to join the queue. Once your name is announced, you can ask your question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel. Alternatively, if you'd like to ask your question via the WebEx, you can type your questions at the bottom right-hand corner of your WebEx screen in the Q&A panel. So once again, you can either dial 01 to ask your question verbally or type your question in the bottom right Q&A panel on the WebEx. And we'll take a brief pause now to see if there are any phone questions. Yes, we're getting some through now. The first question from the phones comes from Paul Dew at Fidelity. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, John. Hi, Javier. Thank you very much for the presentation. Very useful as always. Three questions, if I may. just on the cost base and thinking about kind of the staff costs, which are slightly kind of ahead of pre-kind of COVID levels, what would you expect on kind of staff costs going forward? And is there a particular time of year when you'll kind of be looking to kind of settle agreements, et cetera, going into next year? And then the second question is, on the outlook, obviously you've upgraded the traffic guidance for the rest of this year. How much kind of visibility do you have on kind of the winter flying and then into kind of the start of 2023 currently? And then finally, just on the funding side, just looking at gearing, it looks like obviously gearing, like you mentioned, is kind of back to pre-COVID levels, and particularly kind of Class A gearing is lower than pre-COVID levels. So does it give you an opportunity to kind of optimise and potentially look at more Class A funding versus, say, Class B or other levels? Thank you.
Well, great questions. Let me perhaps ask Javier to pick up on the cost side. I'll pick up traffic, and I'll perhaps start with that just while Javier is thinking of the cost. And then Sally, perhaps if you'd like to pick up on the gearing question. So traffic visibility, generally so far this year, people have been booking very late. So you know, that's been quite a big challenge for everyone from a resourcing point of view, because there's quite often been a last-minute surge in bookings, and it doesn't take a big change. You know, just a few percent on the day change can put the operation under quite a lot of stress, given how stretched we are. But it also just makes it very hard to get forward visibility, and I don't currently have good visibility of booking levels, even through the Christmas period at the moment. And that's one of the reasons why I have been encouraging all the companies across the value chain to keep on scaling up, because a lot of the companies involved, in particular the ground handlers, are on relatively short-term contracts. They don't get much visibility themselves of the level of demand that's coming. And yet those are the people that we rely on to have another 1,000 people ready for next summer. So I want to make sure that even if they don't have visibility from their airline customers as to what demand will be, they themselves are ready just in case extra demand does come through and we don't find ourselves in the same situation we were in early July. So I'm not sure that helps you very much, but it perhaps does reflect the level of uncertainty that still exists in the market that we're all trying to navigate our way through. So Javier, in terms of costs, I'll just sort of touch on one aspect of that, which is pay negotiations. We renegotiated pay with the unions earlier this year on a one-year arrangement, just given the uncertainty. We are due to start pay negotiations again in the new year, and we'll be able to give you more information about that once we have come to a conclusion on that. But Javier, do you want to talk more widely about cost inflation?
Yeah, very happy. Hello, Paul. So I think in terms of cost, first of all, we will provide a full detail of our cost forecast for 2023 in our investor report, which will be published in just few weeks' time. But as in general, I think some of the headlines is our costs will go up. When you look at our cost components, the largest cost component is people. John have already mentioned two things. One is that we are discussing and monitoring in terms of a potential few pay deals. But also I think that we are actively recruiting to really address the peak of demand, which means that there's going to be more colleagues joining the team and therefore costs are likely to go up. Second big area of cost is assets. And obviously, we reopened Terminal 4 in June, so next year we will see the full year impact of having all the operational assets working, which means that our also the cost of operational assets will go up. And then finally, utilities. I explained earlier the, hopefully you agree with me, the effective energy management framework that we have in place, but it's true that we have been building those hedges during the year, which means that next year some of the cheaper price that we bought at the start of the year will mature and will be replaced by more expensive actual spot prices of utilities. So again, although we have managed to control some of the tsunami of energy efficiency costs that we have seen, some of that will start disappearing gradually in 2023 and more importantly in 2024. So long story short, Paul, unfortunately, costs will increase as we ramp up and we will provide you more details in our investor report. And then in terms of funding, Sally, do you want to talk about gearing and optimization of funding?
Sure, will do. Thanks, Javier and John. Hi, Paul. Great question on the gearing ratio. I think the overall gearing ratios have been lower than pre-pandemic across all levels, Class A, Class B, and Holdco. The mixture for the Class B and Holdco in terms of the proportion actually remain the same as pre-pandemic, and that has always been our policy, how to manage the proportion of each level of debt. So I don't think that's going to change. What we are looking at, as Javier and John alluded earlier, gearing is not a problem for us. What we really need to see is to see the cash flow credit metrics stabilize, and that will need to wait to see what CA's final decision coming out. We need to make sure the regulatory settlement and to generate sufficient cash flow to us in order to make sure we maintain the sufficient credit metrics from rating perspective. So it's not the gearing ratio, but more on the cash flow credit metrics side. And so it doesn't necessarily mean we will do more Class A funding or more Class B. And I think majority of our funding will be in the Class A anyway, and the proportion of them will continue going forward.
Thanks, Ali. I think you were able to give a far clearer answer than to Paul's good questions than either Javier or I were able to. Great. Should we go to the next question, please?
Thank you. Just as a reminder to the people on the phones, if you do wish to ask a question, please dial 01 now. Currently one further question on the phones, and that's from Vince Jarosparsky of Fraser. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Hi. Yep, we can.
Perfect. Well, good morning here. It's in Toronto. So just had a quick question. Javier, you had a comment on, just wanted you to expand a bit on the CapEx. You talked about $1.1 billion. There's a catch-up from the prior 2 years, obviously, for you wanted to kind of preserve liquidity given the slowdown in traffic. I was wondering, that $1.1 billion, is that expected, when is that expected to be deployed? I'm assuming everything during the last couple of years is mainly more for safety, maintenance, everything else is more for growth and kind of improvement to look for. So just wanted to kind of get some more color on the $1.1 billion CapEx. When are you looking to kind of deploy that and where that's going to kind of come through? So thanks.
Right. Great. Well, as I think obviously we would like to go back to full CapEx as quickly as possible. Obviously, in the last 2 years, one of the main financing priorities has been about protecting liquidity, and that's why in 2020 and in 2021 we underinvested cumulatively by $1.1 billion. Obviously, we have shared our plans with the regulator in terms of what we believe is and what passengers are requesting in terms of investment going forward. And when you look at our plan, it comprises around £4.6 billion of capex over the next 5 years, including 2022. That's what passengers want. That is what we believe is the right thing, and that includes things not only about maintaining the assets, but also important investments like bringing the new standards and in terms of security and the latest technology in terms of security, so you can keep your laptop and your liquids in your bag. Also, really start investing on the baggage system of Terminal 2, which is quite old. We would like to as quickly as possible, but and that's one of the reasons why we are waiting so much and desperately for the CAA to make the right decision. Obviously, if the CAA were not to make the right decision, unfortunately, we will not be able to invest in capital investment as much as we would like to do, and the most impacted by the decision for the CAA would be we passengers first. So So I think we are gearing up in terms of capital. In 2023, we will see more capex in the region of £600 million. We are ramping up our capital, but obviously the final answer to your question is going to be very, very dependent on what the CA decides in the next few weeks.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Javier.
Thank you. Our next question.
We've got a couple
more phone questions come through just whilst we were answering those ones. The next one comes from the line of Magda Papa at Blue Bay. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, yes, we can.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for the call. Just a quick question on your intentions of the £1.25 billion cash sitting at the Heathrow Finance PLC level. You ruled out the dividend for 2022. Will you rule it out for 2023?
Javier, do you want to pick that up?
Well, I think as a principle, dividends is something that we are very proud to pay, and we will pay as soon as it's safe to do so. So we have discussed through the presentation that gearing is in a very healthy state. I think at this stage, the critical restriction is cash flow generation and what it means in terms of protecting investment grade. So I think at this stage, we are not forecasting dividends in 2022. And obviously, one of the critical focus from ourselves and the board is in the next few weeks in terms of the decision from the CAA. Also, we will continue the ongoing dialogue with the credit rating agencies on the back of that decision. And obviously, we will continue working on building back capacity as quickly as possible and seeing traffic performing back. So obviously, as soon as we can pay dividends and the board, our board believes that it's safe to do so, we will do, because obviously our own shareholders have been very patient over the last 3 years. They have commitments with our own pensioners, and therefore, as soon as it's safe to do so, we will consider.
Thanks, Javier.
Thank you.
To take some quick questions on the line, then we've got a couple in the chat, and we've only got 8 minutes left, so I don't want to shortchange anyone.
Of course, please go ahead, John.
Great. Let's pick up the questions in the chat first. So Miguel Medina asked a couple of questions. How pleased were you with the VAT refund scheme introduced in the mini-budget? Very pleased. Any chance the new administration could change its mind again and reinstate it? Yes, there could be. I mean, to be clear on what we know, the VAT scheme wasn't intended to come in until 2024 anyway, and it would be different to the previous scheme. But our view is that it is a critical part of making the UK competitive for attracting tourists. That's why it's in the government's interest to have a VAT scheme. And of course, it will help with sales at the airport towards the end of the H7 period. So we will be encouraging the government to do that. But at the moment, we've gone back to the previous state where the VAT scheme is not going ahead. Second question from Miguel. The gilt market and GBP exchange rate have been very volatile of late. I guess this translates at least temporarily in higher funding and hedging costs. Will this impact your funding program for 2023? Will this higher volatility and cost of debt impact the CAA's view on your cost of capital? Thank you. Sally, do you want to pick that one up?
Yeah, I do. Thanks, John. Yes, the market has been extremely volatile. It's all over the places, but hopefully the new government will see us stabilised from here. But you're right, that means we will see higher funding costs and higher hedging costs for Heathrow. The Class A bonds that we are trading nowadays is about 6 or 7% comparing to 2 or 3% before, but this is probably the new reality we need to deal with. But I think in terms of whether this will impact our funding program for the 23, no, it won't be. Our funding program is really driven. How much we need to do for the funding is really driven by maintaining at least 24 months liquidity horizon in terms of to make sure we keep that all the way through. So that will determine on our funding program. How we are going to capture the funding, we will always be opportunistic in the market and be open to any currencies between private market and public market as always. Whether this will impact on CA's view on our cost of capital, we hope so, and we are working with them, and they should take into account the current situation and at least to capture this in their opening position. In the long run, any cost of a new debt should be neutralized or compensated through the cost of indexation methodology that CA introduced for the cost of debt, but we are working with them, and we think they should consider the current situation at least in the opening position to get it right.
Great, thanks, Ali. And then got a question from Winyu. Have you had any recent dialogue with the rating agencies, and what would the impact of a potential one-notch downgrade as a consequence of the CAA decision be? Javier, do you want to pick that one up?
Yes, so I think in terms of the first part of the conversation, we have ongoing dialogue with all the rating agencies. Obviously, we keep discussing with them in terms of potential scenarios and potential contingencies, even that we could have. At this stage, I refuse even to accept as a scenario a potential notch downgrade, because we are very much working on the CAA really amending the errors that they have in the current final proposals. Obviously, if that were going to happen, we will navigate through that and we'll keep you posted. Obviously, fortunately or unfortunately, I think this management team has quite a lot of experience in terms of managing crisis, global financial crisis, pandemic, even mini budgets. So I think that if that scenario were going to crystallize, obviously, we are confident that we will be navigating successfully. And one of the things that you can rely on us, that we will continue maintaining the transparent dialogue that we have always had with you investors. So obviously, hopefully, we'll not get there, but we will try to navigate this as competently as we have always done.
Thanks, Javier. We might have time for just one more question on the lines, if there are any more, Mark.
Currently, there's no further questions on the phone lines at this point.
Good. Well, look, those are really good questions, and that's meant that we've pretty much run out of time. What a contrast to where we were back in 2019 when we prided ourselves on the dullness of our presentations and the predictability of what we're going to say, and that's exactly where we want to get back to. I hope you can see that we've navigated the pandemic well. We're navigating the recovery well so far. We've got further to go, but we're doing everything we can to work with all of our partners across the airport to make sure we get Heathrow back to be even better than it was pre-pandemic. But there's a lot of uncertainty out there in terms of demand and clearly an uncertain financing market. So I fear that we might have another year of interesting results presentations with more good questions. But as soon as we can reintroduce tedium and predictability, then we will do so. But I just want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today, and thank you for your support. If there are any things we haven't had a chance to cover, please do follow up with Sally and her team. But as Javier has said, we will do our best to give you a clear and honest view of what we think is going to happen with all of the areas of uncertainty that we face. And I hope you can rely on us to manage through it capably, conservatively, to make sure that your investment in us is secure. So thank you for your time, and look forward to seeing you again in a few months' time.
This now concludes the conference. Thank you all very much for attending. You may now disconnect.